rejection is seen as a bad thing, right? It's seen as something that you know, you didn't get what you wanted. But rejection is also can be a good thing because it can be a measurement of who you are or what you're doing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Culturally Relevant, a podcast featuring conversations about film, television, art, and culture. I'm David Chen, and today I'm going to be speaking with Jia Zhang, an entrepreneur and TED speaker. But before we begin today, I just want to share some personal reflections on this podcast, Culturally Relevant. When I first started Culturally Relevant, I had a vision for who I wanted to have on the show and what the show would be like. My guests were going to be very talented, interesting filmmakers and writers and artists. And by and large, those are the guests I've had on the show, and I've been really privileged to be able to bring our conversations to you, the listener. But one thing I didn't fully understand when I embarked on this journey was how much rejection I'd be dealing with. I mean, I think I knew on an intellectual level that if you ask a bunch of people to appear on your podcast, a bunch of people are going to say no. But there was an extremely wide diversity of no's, like some people are really good about it and some people aren't as good, a bunch of unexpected no's from people that I thought would be yeses, and some of it has been pretty crushing, I'm not going to lie. And occasionally, it can be a challenge to just keep the show going on an emotional level after dealing with a bunch of no's from people who I wanted to appear on the show. Now, I just want to make 100% clear. I don't ever think I have a right to anyone's time. I don't presume or expect that anyone will want to appear on the show. People are extremely busy, myself included, and maybe they just don't like the show or they're not a fan of my personality, whatever. Anyone can have like a million legitimate reasons to not want to appear on a podcast. All I'm trying to say is that getting rejected in general is difficult. Now, I should point out that overall, I feel like I've had some great luck and I'm so grateful for everyone who appears on the show, but rejection is always challenging. And in encountering this rejection, I was motivated to invite my guest today on the show. Jia Zhang is probably the world's foremost expert on rejection. He's done a TED talk about getting rejected that has received over 5 million views. And he's also the author of Rejection Proof, How I Beat Fear and Became Invincible Through 100 Days of Rejection. In writing that book, Jia challenged himself to get rejected 100 times in a row. And during the course of that project, he ended up creating a viral video sensation when he asked a Krispy Kreme to give him donuts in the form of Olympic rings. They said yes, and the results were written about all over the world. It's true. Anyway, Jia speaks regularly at Fortune 500 companies about how he overcame his fear of rejection. You can find more of his work at rejectiontherapy.com. I spoke with Jia about what inspired him to embark on his project of getting rejected and how he was able to parlay his rejection into an actual business. Later on, we count down the top 5 things he learned from getting rejected, so be sure to stick around for that, as well as my weekly recommendations after the interview. Before we get to our conversation, I always want to mention that you can find more episodes of this show at culturallyrelevantshow.com. You can also email us at culturallyrelevantshow@gmail.com. And if you enjoy this conversation or any of the other ones we've had, it would mean so much to me if you'd go to Apple Podcasts and just leave a star rating or a review. It just takes a few seconds, and it really helps a tiny show like mine to stand out amidst the crowd. And of course, if this episode is meaningful to you, you can always share about it on social media. Every little bit helps, and thanks so much to everyone who's already done that. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Jia Zhang. Jia Zhang, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, David. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on, sir. So let's talk a little bit about your origin story. Part of your origin story is you came to America before having your big first encounter with rejection. Can you tell us about what was behind the decision to immigrate and what happened with your first rejection?
Yeah, so I came to America when I was 16, as a high school student. I actually went to rural Louisiana as a cultural exchange student, right? So I grew up in China and always wanted to be this entrepreneur. And I, you know, when I was younger, I listened in on a Bill Gates talk, and I'm just like, that's so cool. You know, I want to build my own Microsoft. I want to, you know, I want to have this old dream, this big dream about entrepreneurship. So when I had the chance to come to the U.S. as a cultural exchange student, I just jumped on this opportunity, right? Then I didn't go to Seattle or L.A. or New York. I went to rural Louisiana, you know, and I'm from Beijing, right? It's a town of 15 million people. We landed in rural Louisiana. I'm like, wow, American, you know, American dream. That's different than I thought. But I said, it's okay. You know, that's the start of a great entrepreneur journey, right? Someday someone will write a book about me, like I'm this entrepreneur from from China, then started, you know, started small and then make it big. And
yeah, you made it part of your story in a positive way, basically.
Yeah, basically. My high school was when my high school was over, I went to college, and so then I did this kind of what everyone else is doing, like all my friends, and go to school, find a job, and make money, and go to graduate school, find a better job, and just kind of went down this corporate ladder, right? And so, and the more I do, the more anxious I got, because I was like, well, you know, where's the kid who wanted to, you know, be Bill Gates, right? And
you felt your ambition slipping away from you, it sounds like.
Yeah, and it's not because of, it's really because because I feel like, you know, I'm doing what everyone else was telling me I should be doing, you know, my family, and I see what my friends are doing, which is, and then when you do that, right, you get rewarded in a way that is almost like you're a kid. When you're a kid, you do what your parents tell you to do, and then you know, you get praised, right? And in society, it's not like I have to do exactly what they tell me to do, but if you get some worldly recognition, as you're going to a big company, you're going to a great school, and people look up to you, right? My parents are proud of me, and later on my in-laws, they're more accepting. But the thing is, going down that path, I just feel that's not what I want. What I want is, if I always want to be this entrepreneur, why am I not doing this? And that's really because I feel I was afraid of rejection from a lot of people, from my family, from possible failure, you know. So I just kept doing this, and I just, you know, it just, you know, after a while, I just feel like I'm not doing what I wanted.
Can I ask you, what is it about being an entrepreneur that so appealed to you? Because, you know, many people would say that what you had already achieved until that point was pretty good, right? Like, you'd gone to school and gotten a job, and like that's already pretty successful. But there's something about being an entrepreneur specifically that continued to entice you, right?
Yeah, there are two parts of this. One is I think part of this is because I just hate taking orders sometimes. I feel like I have so many ideas I want to do, and I feel like there are things that I want to do that it cannot be done in a corporate setting.
Right.
Corporate setting, you're just, there's a big machine, right? They want you to go somewhere and you go there, right? If your idea is any different from the big vision, I mean, you can have, you know, so-called innovations and stuff. You know, people say they like innovation, but actually people don't, you know, people like you, following the big vision that they have. So I feel like I'm just fulfilling someone else's dream, not my own dream. So there's that part of it, and the other half is like I want to leave a legacy. You know, I want to feel like I go through Earth without just basically living a life of someone else. You know, I want to live a life of myself. I want to feel alive. So it feels very as I'm talking, it sounds like very kind of a touchy-feely kind of thing, and it's also a little bit cliche-ish, but it's true. Like, you want to, you want to live your own dream. You want to, you know, have a legacy, and then that's where I feel alive. I feel happy.
Hmm. So how did you first encounter rejection? And, you know, that's the thing that kind of led you to your current life path, right?
Yeah, so when I quit my job, 2 to 3 years after graduate school at this big company, and so I, you know, and it, you know, took a lot of heat from my family, especially from my in-law side, and so I was like, you know, I got to do this. We're gonna have a kid, and I feel like my kid will either be the end of my entrepreneur dream or will be the start, right? and I'd rather make him the start rather than the end. So I quit my job 4 days before my son was born, I started this new company. You know, my wife is very supportive, but when you do that, right, there's opportunity cost, right? You feel you're giving up something, and And so we were building this company where I had a team of four engineers. We were building a mobile app. But when I was, I thought I was doing a really good job. And
what did the app do, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, the app basically gamifies trust, right? So if I, or gamifies promise. So if I promise you something, that I want to, you know, I want to have something sent to you, and that's if I fulfill that promise, you give me some reward, like, or you give me a check mark, and then I feel rewarded by doing that. So it's kind of like productivity thing, but you know, fulfilling promises, and you know, then you know, getting digital reward for it, right? So actually, I don't know. That's the, you know, I kind of quit that idea pretty early after this whole rejection thing, but I'm not sure that's a bad idea actually, you know, even nowadays.
Yeah.
So yeah, but so I was looking for funding for my company, and I found this guy in Austin, Texas. And he's actually really well known and, you know, well respected. So I was looking for funding, right? And the rejection I got was just heartbreaking. Really because of who he is, right? I have a lot of respect for that guy. And I thought, you know, if he doesn't like my idea, he must know more than I did, right? And then I read his book and all that. And then he did the type of rejection, I feel like, should I just give up? You know, and because, you know, if I trust him this much, why should I be going? You know, like, you know, I mean, why should I keep going? And that's where I just felt, man, who are you? What are you talking about? Right? Is it just because someone doesn't like your idea, you're just giving up? And then just all this memories came back. I was like, oh, now I know why it took me so long to become an entrepreneur. Now I understand, because I constantly ask for people's approval. Right. And I almost like everything I did was taking a small private poll of everyone I knew. If they say, yeah, that's a good idea, you should do it, then I do it. And then that's why I was so afraid of rejection. And I was like, you know, I got to change this. If I don't change this, I will be there's no way I'll be successful as an entrepreneur. And even if I go back to the corporate world or do anything else, I was not going to be successful. I can't keep looking for approval like this. So that's why I started this. I did some Google search and found out, you know, how do people overcome their fear of rejection. I ran into this website. It's called rejectiontherapy.com. It's a game that is by this Canadian entrepreneur. His name is Jason Calmley, and he will give you a deck of 30 cards, and each card will give you to get suggested and to get rejected at something on purpose. So instead of running away, you look for it. And the idea is you can desensitize yourself from the pain, and you will overcome your fear. You become this badass. You know, I'm like, wow, it's like the Iron Fist, right? This is the best idea I've ever heard. I want to be a badass. You know, I want to do this. So I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to do this for 30 days. I'm going to do this for 100 days. I want to overdose on rejection. I'm going to see what happens. And then I'll use my creativity to come up with my own ways to get rejected. And, oh, how about if I do like a YouTube channel? Like, you know, I mean, how about do a video blog filming myself doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll share it with the world. And it's not really, I mean, when I did this is a few years ago. You know, vlog isn't as what it is right now. It was actually pretty small. So, I was really ahead of my time. And when I did this, I was just like, you know, I want to share this with the world. I want people to hold me accountable, because I know how easy it is for me to quit. But if I make that public announcement, and I won't quit. And so that's what I did.
Yeah. So it sounds like Jason Conley's idea at rejectiontherapy.com, which you subsequently acquired.
Yep. I bought it from him.
Yeah. That it was originally like 30 rejection ideas, right? But that you increased it to 100. Is that right?
Yeah. And I didn't increase it. I just did my own thing.
Right. So you made up your own thing. So, like, what were some of these things that you challenged yourself to get rejected doing. And by the way, this reminds me a lot of like Fight Club, you know? The, yeah. Your goal this week is to start a fight with someone and lose. It's a very similar to that. But like, yeah. So what were some of the ideas of what you had to do to get rejected?
Yeah. So like I started out pretty, I will say tame or not that creative. Right. So my first one was I'm just go ask someone for money. I walk up to a stranger and say, hey, can you give me $100? And I got rejected. The lead up to that was just nerve wracking. I thought I was going to die. I thought the guy might be like cuss me out. You know, he might pull out of a club, or he might tell me I'm crazy. And I played all these games in my mind. But then when I got there, he just said no, you know. And then I just ran away. The thing is, when that happened, it wasn't as bad as I thought. It wasn't nearly as bad as I thought. And it still gave me the confidence to keep doing.
Who is the guy, by the way, that you asked for money?
So the guy was a random guy. It's a security guard in the downtown office. he was manning the lobby, and I just went up to him. So it happened, and I feel the leading up was way worse than the results, and it right away took me, teach me a lesson. Hey, why am I just this scared? And I didn't die, right? So maybe tomorrow I can be more confident. So day two, I went and asked for a burger refill after eating a burger. And then I just kept doing this, right? I started doing, you know, it just got more fun. And I went to PetSmart, asked them to cut my hair instead of a dog's hair. And during Thanksgiving, I went to the front of Best Buy, and I said, can I be number one? And then it's all this kind of thing. But then the thing is, people started to say yes to me, one after another. And that was really surprised me. So I, for example, I went and knocked on someone's door. I tried to play soccer in his backyard. And I said, and then he was like, oh, yeah, sure, come on in. I was like, now what? Why? So I was just really surprised. And so I got a bunch of yeses. Like, for example, I was able to drive a police car. I was able to went to a just random professor at UT Austin. I said, can I teach your class? And he was like, yeah, do my lecture. And I'm like, what? So I got a lot of yes. I flew a plane and I was able to give a security announcement at the front of a plane, which is crazy. So I think my most famous one.
Yeah, the one that was most viral was you asked a Krispy Kreme donuts to give you donuts in the form of Olympic rings, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was a year where there was Olympics, was happening, and I thought, oh, you know, I mean, there, you know, why do I, you know, I mean, why don't I go to a donut shop and ask them to make me some special donuts, right? If you just interlink five donuts together and make them look like Olympic rings, and there's no way they're gonna say yes to that. I just in my mind, I'm like, I'm just going in and make a joke and then leave, right? And the donut maker took me so seriously. She was like, huh, what's the color look like? You know, how do I do this? If you do it this way, it's going to get stuck there on the fryer, but we should do it that way. And 15 minutes later, she came up with a box of donuts that looked like Olympic, that looked like Olympic rings. That's crazy. And that was a moment when I see my life can be divided into two halves. You know, before donuts,
before the Olympic ring donuts, and after the Olympic ring donuts.
Yeah,
because so that video went viral, over 5 million views on YouTube, right?
Yep, yep.
And that was when you knew you were really onto something, right?
Well, I was there are two parts. One is it's an aha moment in my own mind, right? I was like, there's different, maybe there's like five or six variations that of outcomes that ran into my mind before I went to the donut shop. None of that was this. And it just blew my mind that if I just ask, and I would just ask myself, how many donuts have I missed in my life just because I thought, no way, I would get a yes, right? So it taught me a really good lesson that sometimes you you need to give yourself a shot. You need to give the world a shot to make something magical happen. And the other half, so the other part of that, you know, what amazes me was how people responded to that video. I started getting emails from people all over the world, just telling me this is so inspiring to them. This is so amazing. And then people start doing things on, you know, start doing their own like rejection therapies or make some big risks in their lives, right? And I thought I was the only person who was afraid of rejection, or maybe me and a few other people. And so as it turned out, like everyone had this fear. But if the people start overcoming that fear and they start doing things, they can make some real changes. You know, there are people starting new businesses. There are people who got promoted. You know, there are people who took on more responsibilities. There are people who, I mean, I got a lady who started a ministry for prostitutes. That's another foreign country, and that was just blew my mind what people can do if you just go out and just, I mean, if you're just less afraid.
So it's amazing. We're going to get to your top five lessons that you learned from your 100 days of rejection shortly. But before we get to that, first of all, it's incredible that this was day three of your project, right? Like,
yeah.
You hit gold on day three. It wasn't like day 96 or anything like that. So what an amazing way to start that project. And so that's when you kind of realize, oh, wow, there's a big audience for this. Like, but there is still kind of a big leap you need to take from doing that to making it a business, which is kind of what you've done since then. You are now a public speaker, you're an author. So like, when did you realize like, hey, I can turn this into kind of, if not a full-time gig, then at least something that can be something that sustains me?
Yeah, so I did that, I think not maybe a couple weeks after the all the craziness, you know, all the viral video. Just, you know, like when I did this rejection therapy thing, right, it's about 80% is overcoming my fear. And 20% of this was like, hey, what if, you know, some people are interested in this, right? And I didn't think it was going to be this successful, but I was like, what if there are a few people who are interested in this, and I can, maybe they are interested in my company as well. Maybe they can download my app. You know, I was having a hard time getting people to use my app, and I was like literally begging people in my co-work space, say, hey, can you try this?
This is still the like gamifying promises app you're talking about.
Yes, right? Yeah. Yes. And I was sending emails to my classmates. They were like, oh, yeah, sure, I will try it. And then later on, I learned that, hey, if you make a topic that's interesting, even that's not connected to your app, your product, if people are interested in you, maybe they are interested in your product as well. So that's what that's 20% of me doing this, right? So I did this. I got thousands and thousands of downloads just in a couple of days. That, you know, I had literally like 20 downloads before that. I got thousands of people who were downloading my app that in the day after. And
just from the halo effect of you making this viral video, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Because if people are interested in you, they're interested in what you're doing.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, I'm sure you can relate to this. And so that's what happened. And then I felt like, okay, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's really not about having a cool idea and see that come to fruition. It's really about solving a problem. It's really about, you know, finding a market. And I found, okay, people are downloading the app, but their interests are still focused on the rejection thing. You know, people are like, this, you're helping me overcome my fear, making changes in my life.
Right. So it didn't make sense necessarily that, like, the way you're translating the equity from, you know, the viral video stuff was doing this app that's somewhat unrelated, right?
Yeah, somewhat unrelated. And also, I feel I found a much bigger problem than my original app idea. You know, this new problem of people being afraid, and then I can help them that with that, right? I don't know what it is yet, right? I mean, I do know one thing is I was making blog, I was filming videos. That was helpful. So I don't know what else that can lead to, but I found a market. I found a need, right? So I was like, you know, let me focus on developing solutions for this.
As you're thinking through how to convert it into a full-time business, like, what were some of the things that the challenges that you encountered doing that?
Yeah, at the beginning, I just didn't know what I just didn't know what I was going to do. And it's not because that I don't have this market, because now I know a market, but I don't have a sustainable solution. You know, I wasn't going to do videos forever. You know, I'm not like Logan Paul. I can't do this, you know, and it's not what I liked to do over the long term. So what else do I do other than doing these videos, right? And it seems like the world is possible. In the world is you know, it's a possibility. I can do a podcast. I can write a book. There are people pitching me game shows, like shows on TV. There are movie executives. They're like, hey, how about we write a script for you? You know, like this guy who's lost, who doesn't have love, then he went to Krispy Kreme and get rejected, and then he got a yes, and he fell in love with the lady at Krispy Kreme. I'm like, that's not my story. I mean, I'm already married. I'm pretty happy with this. So the thing is, there are so many possibilities sometimes there's an indigestion of ideas, and then you feel a little bit paralyzed, right? You want to pick the right one. So you start overanalyzing things. I think that's a big problem. And then I started getting these opportunities to share this story, right, with people, because people are like, you know, hey, I have an audience. I have a audience that's in my first basically speaking engagement was by this lady. She was doing a meetup, a monthly meetup, a self-development meetup at her chiropractor's office. And she said, we got like 10 people. We meet every month, and can you speak to them? I'm like, I haven't done speaking before, and I was afraid of speaking. So I said, okay, I'll try this. So I went, I sat down. I still remember, it's a small chiropractor's office. There's a there were 10 people there, and the projector slide was blue. It was covered, half my face is in blue. And then she was like, you got 2 hours. I'm like, what? How do I talk about 2 hours? What am I doing here? So that's my first speaking engagement, and I don't feel I did a good job, but people give me applause, and I felt okay. People are actually enjoying this story, and they ask me tons of questions. And it just I start building some confidence, and then I start getting like bigger and bigger gigs. And I remember later on I was invited to give a TEDx talk at TEDx Austin, right? It was one of the biggest events in Austin when it comes to speaking. So, and I was like, oh wow, this is actually pretty big. You know, I wanted it, but I'm not that good at public speaking. What do I do? You know, what if I bomb, right? So I turned one of my 100 days of rejection, my rejection therapy is giving a speech on the street. So I feel like if I can give a speech on the street to people walking by, I can give a speech, you know, when people are not expecting to be there, I can make a speech to people when they are there, you know, when they're paying to be there. So I get so much confidence from that. And so when I give that speech, it was very successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I don't know if it's the same event, but your TEDx talk has since been viewed over 5 million times, right?
No, that's not the same event. Yeah, it was so my first was like TEDx Austin. That was when I was still doing 100 Days of Rejection, right? So about a year later, a couple years later, I wrote my book, right? And I was publishing my book, and I got another invite to this event in TEDx in Portland, Oregon. So I wasn't going to do it. I was like, they're like, I've already done this. But it's a friend. And also I learned not to turn down opportunities when we can still, you know, when you feel there's potential value. So I went, right? That's a TEDx Mount Hood. So that talk changed my life, you know, literally. Because after giving that talk, it's about a year later, I got a news from TED that they want to turn this TEDx talk in, they want to feature this on their, on TED.com. They want to turn this into a real TED talk. And that's where I got the 5 million views. And that's where, that's my marketing, that's my business card now.
It's amazing. You went from like giving a talk to like a group of chiropractors to you know, giving a TED talk to millions of people, right?
Right.
Is there a moment in like, obviously the TED talk was a big deal, but was that the inflection point? Was there another inflection point when you thought to yourself like, oh wow, like this is really, I've made it in the sense that like I've taken this idea like pretty far.
Yeah. Okay. I think that the inflection point is still happening right now. Right. So, you know, I really believe I'm in chapter 3 of a 10 chapter book when it comes to this rejection stuff. But looking back to the first three chapters, right? So the Krispy Kreme donut was, you know, how many views he got, right? I got a lot of TV, you know, I got a lot of emails, I got a lot of views, I got also a TV interview. You know, from that, I learned that people want this, you know, people need this. But also, you know, but that's where I know there's 15 minutes of fame for everyone, right? So, you know, when it comes and it will, you know, it might come, it might go, right? How do I actually...
You didn't think it would necessarily last when you got
No. Yeah. Or this part of me want this to last. This is a part of me saying, let me work on... I mean, I know if I didn't work, it's not going to last.
Yeah.
It's going to it's going to go away, right? That's where all this entrepreneurial training and all these ideas, you know, also probably my business school training came to part, you know, I mean, came to help a little bit, right? How do I actually turn this into something sustainable, right? Something that can, from a cool viral video into something people can learn and you know, and as a product or they can use to improve themselves, right? So that's when I started giving speaking. And then another inflection point is probably because the TEDx Austin event, right? That's the first time I'm speaking in front of like this many people. There were over 1,000 people there. There was actually one of the head guys from Microsoft. And I know you used to work at Microsoft, and was one of the big guys at Microsoft who was like the inventor of Kinect. And there were people who were speaking, and there were people who are having social movement for helping homeless people to gain health. There are people who went to Africa who changed their whole medical system. I'm like, who am I? Right? I'm just a rejection guy. Then and then I started to be afraid again. But then I just told myself, hey, none of these guys go out and get rejected either. Right? I'm the rejection guy. So if I get rejected by 1,000 people, that's, you know,
there's value in being really good at one thing, right?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
So, and I just, instead of trying to measure up to be someone else, and I just say, hey, I'll just be myself. So I give that talk and I got a standing ovation from over 1,000 people, right? That's where it just, that moment was probably an inflection point saying, oh, okay. Not only, you know, I got like two great things now, not just a viral video or a blog, but I'm able to deliver this to people and giving this, you know, such positive response, and the people talking to me afterward, they're like, you know, this is the best talk I've ever heard. And they're like, you know, this is changing my life. And it's the type of words that I've never heard before. But as an entrepreneur, I was like, okay, you know, if this is truly amazing, but also if people have this type of emotional resonance to this, right? This has got to be much bigger. You know, I can keep doing this, and I can make this, you know, I can build this into something that they can use for a long time.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I love your attitude about it, you know, because you even acknowledge talking about the viral video. You're not like, oh yeah, I'm set for life now that I have this viral video. Like you recognized that, hey, this might be short lived, but you kept looking for opportunities to make it into something longer lasting and more impactful. And yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, I mean, there's ambition in saying, you know, you want to be successful. You want to build something. This entrepreneur thought is you want to build something that will be long lasting.
Yeah.
Right. So, but there's the other part of which is just constantly you have this constant fear that, hey, you know, if you sit on your laurels, if you think you've made it, you would, you know, I mean, you're never gonna make it. You're gonna keep innovating. You're gonna keep, you know, iterating. You're gonna keep doing better things.
Yeah. So, Ja, one of the reasons I wanted you to join me on this podcast is because starting this new podcast, Culturally Relevant, I talked a little bit about this in the intro, but basically This is one of the things I've made that I'm most proud of, this show, you know, and the ability to talk to interesting and talented people like yourself to get insights out into the world about the various things that people are working on. I'm very proud of it. At the same time, you know, that I'm really happy with all the people that have joined me on Culturally Relevant. It's also been a situation that has subjected me to a lot of rejection, which is not something that I think I knew on an intellectual level that there would be a lot of rejection. You know, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to ask a bunch of people to appear on the show and some of them will say no. In fact, probably many of them will say no. I knew that going in to doing this, but I didn't really fully comprehend it until like those rejections started rolling in. And like rejections come in all different shapes and sizes too, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I have been surprised by is the variety of rejections. You know, there have been some rejections that have been very curt, some that are like extremely polite and professional that I actually like, I'm so impressed by the rejection that like, I'm not even disappointed. The rejection is really well done. Right. And then there's some, I think probably the most maddening one is like this. I didn't even know this happened, honestly. But like the people that like ghost you all of a sudden, like they express interest. So when I send an email, I'll say, hey, you know, here's the premise of the show. And, you know, I'd love to have you as a guest. And they don't need to respond to that. Right. Like if they just say nothing, like I completely understand they're getting 100 emails every day. But the one rejection that's really surprised me is people then responding to this email saying like, hey, David, I'd love to join you on the show. Then we spend a lot of time negotiating like a date and time, and then they just completely vanish off the face of the earth. Yeah. Like I never hear from them again. And I just has surprised me. I didn't know that actually happened still. But so point being, there's been a lot of rejection I've encountered from people who I really deeply admire and respect. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is to share with us some of the top five lessons you have learned from making a career out of being rejected, right?
Right.
So you have five lessons to share with us today. And so I was hoping we could count them down. Let's start with like your number five lesson from being rejected.
Yeah, so I think my number five is very relevant to what you're talking about. Rejection is an opinion. It actually says more about the rejector than the rejected. You know, in these 100 days, I could go out and ask 10 different people. I was the same person, right? And I was able to get some yes, get some no, get some high fives, get some smiles. And also there are people who just couldn't wait to get away from me faster. And I'm like, I'm the same person, right? I'm making this exact same request. How can I get all these different type of responses? And I was like, oh, okay. It actually says more about them than me. It may be that person is having a bad day or good day, or maybe it's something that just happened a couple minutes ago, or maybe it's a night before, or maybe it's a lifelong of that person's personality, education, understanding, prejudice. You know, I don't know. I was, but I was the same person. So when it comes to rejection, right, when it comes to something that you're so passionate about or you feel is important to you, you feel it's all about you. You know, we're the centers of our own universe. We're the heroes of our own movies. We have this thing called spotlight effect, right? We think we're constantly under the spotlight. And that's why we magnify these rejections. We think it's about us and we feel it's hurtful. But the thing is, you know, everyone's got their own crap they have to be dealing. I mean, you know, they have to deal with. Everyone's got their own insecurities and own things. So I'm sure we both get a lot of requests too, right, from other people. And sometimes sometimes the request is just how I feel about that day, right? And also after a while, I start getting assist. You know, if I'm busy that time, or maybe I don't think maybe this the request is big enough, and there are all kind of reasons that those rejection can come, right?
Yeah.
But it really doesn't say nearly as much about you as it does with the other person.
Yeah, there's nothing immutable about what a rejection represents. It's just an opinion from someone else, basically.
It's an opinion from someone else, and don't magnify it and don't internalize it all the time.
All right. Right. Well, it's a great number five lesson. What's your number four lesson you've learned from being rejected?
Number four lesson is giving is actually a great way to get. And this is from my 100 days rejection, but also is in my business dealings, right? Sometimes I learn that just by giving people things, by helping them, right? And then sometimes you don't have to even ask. They will want to give you things. So I teach people how to ask, right? That's what I do, right? But number one, the way to ask is to give, is to be build that relationship. And then I got so many opportunities, you know, I think almost all my big breaks in my business are where we build a relationship, where I've given things out for free. And just because I admire the other person, or and then the other person will be like, okay, how can I help you? Or they would recommend, suggest, how about we do this?
So it's almost like you're saying, like, that's a way to curtail rejection, right? Is like potentially offer something or be of service first, and that makes it harder for someone to reject you theoretically.
Yeah, I say do this not tactically. But strategically, or maybe like a life philosophy,
life philosophy, like pay it forward, golden rule kind of thing. It's generally how you should be. You shouldn't necessarily do it to extract something from someone, but that's just a generally positive way to be. Is that right?
Yeah. That's my wife. She is the best at this. And I just think she's a better person. You know, she genuinely just won't help people. Or when I met her at school and she was telling me talking about life philosophy, right? What do you want in life? She's like, I want to make people happy and I want to help them. And that just shocked me. I'm like, when I hear that, it's usually some sort of a touchy-feely, thing, but not in a real, not from someone like her when she's going to business school and having a great future in front of her. I'm just like, that's your goal? But because she does that, she got so many people to help her in everything she does. And that's not about a strategy. That's not a tactic. That's not like, okay, let me help you first, and maybe in return you'll help me. But that's just who she is. And that's I feel like I still want to develop that type of be better at giving. Mm. So
number four, giving is a great way to get, but giving is also good in and of itself.
Right.
Number three, what's your number three lesson from rejection?
Number three is there are two type of people in the world. And the first type of people are they do things they are pretty good at and they keep building on it, right? They can be pretty successful with it. I'm not saying they won't be, but there's other kind of people which I feel they can make some real changes in society. And these are the people who they found out a problem they have, right? Instead of running away from it, instead of or maybe a weakness, instead of just try to avoid it, they try to overcome it, right? They try to confront it, that's kind of what I learned from 100 Days of Rejection, right? I mean, I was afraid of rejection. I could have just keep avoiding it. I could be like let me try to find the path of least resistance and going forward. But I didn't, and I was like, let me embrace it. Let me dig deeper. Let me have fun with this, and then all kind of possibilities opened up because I wasn't alone. You know, when you have a problem, you're usually not alone. And if you can confront it and find a solution, then you can inspire. You can help a lot of other people who have the same problem, right? The fear of rejection is a huge, huge problem. So I was, fortunate enough to actually found a big problem. But any time in life you felt something that's that they feel bothers you, they feel really hurts you, and instead of say, how can I not get it? Say, all right, how do I, maybe I have a solution for this. Maybe someone else don't have a solution. Maybe I do. When I do, you can help a lot of people who have the same issues.
So if I'm to summarize that bullet, it would be like kind of take bold chances. Is that kind of what you're encouraging? Like, because you draw a comparison between like, people who aren't really very risky and people who kind of try to put themselves out there? Is that kind of it?
No, actually, that's another point I want to talk about. That's number two. But okay, let's stay with number three.
Yeah.
I guess number three is more about when you find problems, there are opportunities.
Mm.
And then don't wait for someone else to solve the problem. Sometimes it's like, you know, when you're having the problem, others are having the problem as well. Maybe you can find a solution. And when you do, man, that can lead to opportunities and also businesses.
Yes. So the Chinese word for crisis is also opportunity, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So that's something we both learned. But yeah, all right. So crisis can be opportunity. Number two. What's your number two lesson?
Okay. Number two is life really rewards risk taking.
Yeah.
Actions is the only way to success. Right, I feel like a lot of people, and including myself, and try to strategize, try to think about, you know, try to plan the perfect thing, right? What's the next move? And then I feel like that's counterproductive because sometimes your plan will falter as soon as it meets real world enemies, right? There's the line saying, you know, your battle plan. Well, your battle plan is useless as soon as you meet the enemies, and it's the same thing. But you have to meet the enemies; otherwise, you're always going to be in your trenches, just doing daydreaming. Then you get run over, right? So, I mean, if you look at everyone who's successful, like almost everyone who's successful in life, they have always taken some chances, right? You can't just stay in your comfort zone forever and try to, you know, have that lead to success. So I'm sure like this happens. I mean, you're taking chances, you're doing this new podcast, right? But I'm sure when you were doing your first podcast, you know, you weren't, I mean, it was an action that you took. It was a chance you took, right? And you led to all these amazing things. So, the same thing with me, right? I want to be an entrepreneur. I've been dreaming and thinking and strategizing, thinking there's maybe a perfect moment for that entrepreneurship to happen. Then life was passing me by. And then as soon as I start taking actions, right, it did not go as planned right? I wanted to get this funding. I didn't get it. But it led to something else. It led to something more amazing. It opened up this big opportunity that I feel is way better than I could ever imagined. So, but the only way this could happen is because I took a chance. I take some actions. So life awards with those people who take actions.
Great. Yeah, that's a great number two lesson. And the number one lesson, Jia, that you've learned from getting rejected.
The number one lesson is rejection is seen as a bad thing. Right, it's seen as something that you know you didn't get what you wanted, but rejection can also be a good thing because it can be a measurement of who you are or what you're doing. So I was looking at history. Right, there are the people who made they made huge changes in life, in society, in the way we think, in the way we treat each other. These are not the people who just found a path that was the path of least resistance. Right, they faced some violent rejections, even gruesome rejections. We're looking at people like Mahatma Gandhi, right? Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln. You know, they all ended up getting shot. Getting assassinated. I mean, there's not worse rejections than that, right? Getting killed. But these are the people but these are the type of rejections they were facing because they changed the way we behave, we live, we see the world, not because they run away from rejection, it's because they embrace rejection. So sometimes I ask myself, hey, am I worthy of these rejections? Is this project I'm doing, is that worthy of the rejections I'm getting? And if it is, I'll keep going. If it's not, maybe I should quit.
Right, so that the rejection itself isn't inherently bad, but if you do get rejected, you should make sure that it's in service of a worthy cause, right?
Yeah,
you don't want to be rejected for stupid reasons. You want to be rejected because you're doing something that's worthwhile and risky and that's meaningful to people, right?
Absolutely. And in my book, I talk about there are all kind of ways you can turn rejection around. You can overcome rejection. You can get more yeses. But I feel none of that is as important as this lesson, right? I mean, because no matter what you do, no matter how skillful you become, you're still going to get rejections, right? But if you're still, you know, is it still worth doing? I mean, you have to ask yourself, right? Is it still worth doing? And you know, if it is, then you should be like, hey, let's have more rejections. Let's keep doing this. So in this way, rejection can be a way for you to find meaning in your project or even in life in general.
So, all right, yeah, rejection can be a measure of who you are and what you're doing, can be a way for you to find meaning in life as well. You know, John, yeah. before we get going, though, there is one other thing I want to ask you is like, first of all, thank you for sharing the five lessons. After you've done all this, there have been a lot of people who have shared their rejection stories and their success stories with you, you said, right? They've emailed in, they've probably tweeted at you or messaged you in some way. And I guess I'm curious, like, have there been any of those things that have surprised you and any other lessons that you've learned from other people's rejections?
Yeah. Absolutely. So the biggest thing that they don't share, I mean, okay, they share rejections with me. They're like, you know, I've been rejected by my parents, or maybe, you know, I have a hard time getting a date. You know, I hear a lot of those things. But also I hear a lot of success stories. People are like, hey, I'm an artist, and I start sharing her art after seeing your video, and now I'm actually well known. There are people who, you know, who started, you know, who became writers, and you know, who just make those changes. I mean, also there are people who invited me to speak, because she was like, you know, I saw your video, and I was this little person low on the totem pole and here in my company, but after seeing your video, I did the best I can. I tried to get more responsibilities. I just tried to expand, but now I got promoted and now I'm in charge of this conference. So I'm inviting you as my hero, as a speaker. So I hear all those kind of stories, right? And one thing really surprised me is how easy and tough at the same time to take those risks in life. Right. A lot of times those perceived risks can just play in your head for years and years. You just don't do anything. And also because of the little reward that not taking action keep giving you. Right. This is the thing, like you still have a job. You're still getting paid. Everyone still likes you. Right. But if you can overcome that initial seek for approval, you go out to do something. Usually something much bigger and greater happens. So yeah, I've learned a lot from the people who are doing this. I mean, not just me. By the way, if you want to add one more thing, another thing I learned is I'm working with some of the biggest company in the world now, try to help their people. And I'm doing this on a very, on a leadership level. So I work with CEOs, I work with executives to get their people, you know, going, right? So, and what the more I know them, the more I talk to them, sometimes I feel like, wow, sometimes they don't know what they're doing. Because I feel like you can have a lot of, you can try to motivate your people, you can talk to them, you can give them content, you know, give them videos, give them trainings, right? But really, the only way to make change is actions, right? Can you get people to do things? And that's really the toughest thing to do in leadership. So that's what I'm working on next. I'm building this app, helping people, organizations to overcome their fear initial, the comfort zone, right? So they can take actions. So there are a lot of things that surprise me, I want to continue to be surprised.
All right. Well, Ja, I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes of that and what your next steps are. And it's really heartening to hear how your story has helped a lot of other people overcome their fear of rejection. Grateful for you sharing your stories here today. Ja Jiang is an entrepreneur and TED speaker. He's also the author of Rejection Proof, How I Beat Fear and Became Invincible Through 100 Days of Rejection. He speaks regularly at Fortune 500 companies about how he overcame his fear of rejection. Find more of his work at rejectiontherapy.com. Ja Jiang, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, David.
Welcome to Weekly Recommendations, where every week I recommend something I've been watching, reading, smelling, drinking, whatever. This week, I want to recommend a podcast to you, but before I get to that, I want to just talk briefly about the fact that this last Friday saw the release of Todd Phillips' Joker movie, starring Joaquin Phoenix. Joker is a very provocative movie. It's gorgeously shot. It has a gripping central performance by Phoenix. And I think it's worth talking about. I think it's worth thinking about. And it's definitely a movie that deserves to exist, that people should be allowed to see if they want to. And I really appreciated reading and listening to a bunch of different takes on the movie, a bunch of different reactions to the movie. And after having read a bunch of articles, a bunch of reviews, I will link to several of them in the show notes. But the one I want to just call out is this podcast called The Big Picture. It's from The Ringer, and it's hosted by Sean Fennessy. This week, they had an episode entitled A Joker Deep Dive, in which host Sean Fennessy and Shay Serrano talk about the history of the Joker character and then dive into this specific incarnation of him. I just really enjoyed hearing about all the different ways that this character has been imagined over time, and found that podcast episode to be super valuable. So Joker is the name of the movie. The Big Picture is the name of the podcast. And of course, if you want to hear more of my thoughts on the movie, just head on over to the /filmcast at /filmcast.com. By the time you're listening to this, our Joker episode should be out. I'll also link to a bunch of those other pieces in the show notes of Culturally Relevant. So I think that's going to bring us into this episode. This episode was produced and edited by me, David Chen, and it was powered by Simplecast, a great resource for anyone looking to start their own podcast. Check out Simplecast.com. Find more episodes of this show at culturallyrelevantshow.com. Email us at culturallyrelevantshow@gmail.com. Please leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts if you're liking the show. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.